This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
City's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. One of the first things I wanted to do is pass along a little of the news that is obscured by the marathon bombings, or should I say scarathon. This from Henry Nyman's, Dr. Henry Nyman's Recombinomics. There was a familial cluster of influenza discovered in Shanghai. A Minhang familial cluster, he calls it, first reported on March 7th. At the time, he writes, it was known that three family members had been admitted to the Fifth People's Hospital in the Minhang district of Shanghai, China, between March 14th and March 24th with severe pneumonia, and it was known that the father and the youngest son had died. Officials noted that they had tested negative for the novel coronavirus and common flu serotypes, and that the pneumonia was due to weather changes. A microblogger posted that they had died from influenza, and the blogger was arrested and fined for spreading false rumors. However, on March 31st, the confirmation of three cases of H7N9 bird flu was announced, including two from Shanghai. One of the Shanghai cases, age and gender, matched a father in the cluster, and subsequent reports indicated that all three family members, as well as the second confirmed cases in Shanghai, lived in the Minhang district, and all four were treated on the same floor of the Fifth People's Hospital. Now, departing from what Dr. Nyman had written here, the reason pneumonia comes up is because it falls on influenza and often kills. So where you see a lot of pneumonia, there's a possibility of a lot of flu. Returning to his text, both confirmed cases had died, and the family of the second case threatened to file suit against the hospital based on the infection due to one or more of the symptomatic family members. And skipping down to the bottom of the article, the time gap between the hospitalization of one or both sons on March 14th and disease onset in the father on March 19th indicated the source of the infection of the father, who had not left his residence in the 2 weeks prior to the disease onset, was one or both sons, defining human-to-human transmission. So that's the big news in terms of influenza. There is human-to-human transmission in Shanghai. Once again, that's from Recombinomics.com, so you can read a lot more details there. This from Fukushima Diary. There is a lake in Haruna District, according to Takasaki City Government in Gunma District. They're going to hold a triathlon at the Haruna Lake this summer. The entrants are from 6 years of age. It's a resort place. The altitude is 1,000 meters, about 3,200 feet. And the reason I bring this up, and the reason that it's on Fukushima Diary, is that they have the pond smelt fishing there. And they're not going to have it this year because even though they put 80 million eggs of pond smelt into the pond in 2012, they have no smelt. They managed to collect 4 smelt samples. They had all died. In the 4 smelt samples they found, 340 becquerels per kilogram of cesium-134 and 137 was measured. So Their pond smelt is extinct. They can't go fishing for it, but they're going to go swimming in that lake. And that pretty much brackets the situation of Fukushima, which continues to get worse. Also obscured by the Marathon bombing, the unemployment situation. Now, here's the way it's reported in Reuters. They write, the number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment benefits rose slightly last week, allaying fears of a major setback in the labor market recovery. Now, if that is putting you to sleep and confusing you already, I think it's because it's intended to. In that one sentence, we hear that the number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment rose, but that allayed fears? And what do they mean by labor market? Bamboozlement. Gaslighting, even, I would say, is the way that unemployment is repeated and reported in the U.S. I'll read a little more of the Reuters report just to give you an idea of that. Initial claims, they say, for state unemployment benefits increased 4,000 to a seasonally adjusted 352,000, the Labor Department said on Thursday. The prior week's number was revised to show blah, blah. A Labor Department analyst said claims for California and Kentucky had been estimated. Despite the increase last week, they wrote, which was broadly in line with economists' expectations, claims held near a level economists normally associate with average monthly job gains of more than 150,000. Now, the only number I want you to remember from that is 150,000. They followed with the phrase, that helped to further ease concerns of a deterioration in labor market conditions after non-farm payrolls posted their smallest increase in 9 months in March. What the heck does all that mean? I think what it means is the corporate press can effectively and continually obscure the fact that a quarter of the population is out of work or severely underemployed, and half the population is underemployed or out of work. Excuse me. This is Press Watch. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Now, countering that, you can turn to alternative media like Counterpunch. There's an article that was originally posted on Al Jazeera. Was written by Dean Baker on the first of this month. He writes, many of the pundits are once again celebrating the pickup of the U.S. economy. Unfortunately, this upturn, like prior ones, seems to exist more in their heads than in the data. The big bright spot being highlighted is the 200,000 monthly job creation rate since October. This only sounds like good news for those who don't remember that we created 240,000 jobs a month in the same 5 months last year. Now, I was asking you to remember that, 150,000. 240,000 jobs a month in 5 months last year. 200,000. This is sort of like, this is like George Orwell's 1984, in which the totalitarian government, in its gaslighting and bamboozlement, in its doublethink, announces that the amount of chocolate ration has been increased from 2.5 grams. To 2 grams. If you're confused, well, that's the intended effect. But Dean Baker writes, this is bad news for tens of millions of people who are unemployed, underemployed, or have dropped out of the workforce altogether. There's little prospect that the economy will grow enough to substantially improve their employment prospects anytime soon. Nor is there much hope for any policy shift that will provide a boost to the rate of growth. And departing from Baker's writings, that's because this redepression is different. This time the jobs aren't coming back because they've been exported. They're gone. There aren't any factories who are waiting to rehire. This isn't like the 1930s. It's pretty grim, and I think it needs to be generally acknowledged that an entire generation of Americans has been betrayed. An entire generation of Americans has gone out, gotten their college degrees, and haven't gotten a real job. And they're wondering, when's that real job going to come? And if you graduated in 08 or 09 or 10, and those years have been passing by, and you haven't gotten that real job, well, that increases the possibility that you won't, because after all, supposing someone wants to hire, say, an electrical engineer, suppose they've got enough slack in their hiring there that they can pick up some fresh electrical engineering graduates. Well, are they going to want to pick up someone who graduated this year with the latest in electrical engineering knowledge, or someone who graduated 5 years ago? This is betrayal, And it's going to have its consequences. There's a lot more to that article. You can find it on Counterpunch. He also writes that it's a good time to look to Germany. The unemployment rate in Germany is 5.4%. And he points out that even with a recent decline to 7.7%, the unemployment rate in the United States is still more than 3 percentage points above its pre-recession level. And once again, departing from his text, that's Germany 5.4% real unemployment as opposed to 7.7% bogus pretend unemployment in the United States, because the statistics are so cooked. And you can prove that to yourself. Just go ahead and try to find work, and you find other little hints. I believe most recently the stats in Oregon were that there were five people for each available job. And that's not even counting people who have completely given up. He writes, the difference in labor market performance between the U.S. and Germany is even more striking if we look at the employment to population ratio, which measures the percent of the population that is employed. Before the recession, that ratio for people between age 16 and 64 is roughly 5 percentage points higher in the United States than in Germany. In 2012, the ratio for this age group in Germany was more than 5 percentage points higher than in the United States, making a total shift in Germany's favor of more than 10 percentage points. If you think this difference is explained by a booming German economy, then you haven't looked at the data. Growth since the beginning of the downturn has been almost identical in the two countries. From 2007 to 2012, Germany's economy grew a bit more than 3%. The U.S. economy grew a hair less than 3%. The difference can't come close to explaining the gap. And he writes that the secret to Germany's better outcomes is that the country has an explicit policy of pushing employers towards shortening work hours rather than laying off workers. And as I said, there's much more to that article. And these are the issues that have been obscured by the bombing at the marathon. And, of course, I do want to look at that, and I have been looking at the Boston Marathon bombing. But if you have comments or questions, the number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. As soon as I noticed earlier this week that the shrapnel bombs at the Boston Marathon were dominating the news cycle, I was determined to watch the press. This is Press Watch, after all, and I wanted to see what sort of message was being promulgated. And, of course, we all know now that we are to treat this event as son of 9/11, even to the extent of calling the bombs the twin bombs, like the Twin Towers. We're supposed to forget the third tower detonation, it's Twin Towers. You know, the 40-story WTC-7 just doesn't exist, I suppose. It was problematic, and we're supposed to pretend only two bombs were detonated that day, two buildings were detonated. So twin bombs it is, and three dead and a lot of wounded, and it's horrible. And perhaps the death toll would be much higher if it were not for the fact that so many of the people targeted were very healthy and athletic, perhaps about as healthy and athletic a crowd as could be brought together. So twin bombs, son of 9/11, flags at half staff everywhere. Does that strike you as a little excessive? I mean, sure, it's a tragedy. It's really bad. I don't need to say that. But we have this rhetoric. We have the president coming up and saying, we're all Americans now, and that's code, meaning there's no room for dissent. The bombs themselves mimic those constructed in Afghanistan by those attempting to repel invaders, but that's not how it's phrased, of course. The bombs mimic the IEDs that target our troops. That's how it's phrased. You've heard it by now, the shrapnel placed into pressure cookers. That's an easier and quicker way of making essentially a pipe bomb, a self-tamping bomb that uses a lesser amount of explosive and multiplies its power by the strength of the steel. Pressure cookers. I don't know if people know pressure cookers now. It's kind of a grandma thing. It is a pretty efficient way of cooking your food. It takes less fuel. As if determined to parody themselves, Fox News, we repeat, you believe, repeated a story about a Saudi national in custody hours after the Boston police had debunked it. And CNN similarly was just mentioned on Democracy Now. Jon Stewart mocked them after they claimed that a dark-skinned man had been found and was arrested. And then it turned out that story was just entirely bogus. NPR short headlines on the jazz station locally follow the Boston News with a report of that. You remember this, the FBI hippie bomb scare, Occupy sort of quasi-related bomb scare. A couple of guys were basically bamboozled, as is usually the case, almost always the case, by the FBI into creating a bogus bomb. And they were threatening a bridge with it. And somehow they thought that was, we're talking about the short headlines. Somehow they thought that was, well, maybe they were just being helpful and assigning blame, or maybe the news editor just wanted to say that dissent is dangerous. And then locally we had, well, a fare box left on the bridge. Full disclosure, I am a bus driver. I see those fare boxes. They're all inventoried because they're full of cash, or potentially full of cash, and so that people don't play little switchy games with them. They know exactly how many fare boxes there are. They're very careful with them. The idea that it bounced off of a truck is, to me, less than credible. And the initial report was that a person on a bicycle had left that fare box on the bridge. And if you haven't heard about this, the Steel Bridge here in Portland, the major artery for the MAX commuter light rail, was shut down. There was all kinds of delays. There were police all over the bridge. It was a bomb scare, basically, following the Boston news. And it was because of a fare box? I'm skeptical. And I want to say this. TriMet is an FBI InfraGuard member. InfraGuard is the public-private partnership. Skeptical? Yeah. USA Today printed up its banner headline, "Terror is Back." And as was the case with the events of September 2001, we were repeatedly told that there was no way that any authority had an inkling of the attack. And as was the case then, it's clear that they did. Boston Marathon is a major national event. And of course, it had the usual post 9/11 degree of security, you know, welded down sewer openings, video cameras everywhere, cops everywhere, including on the rooftops. And, well, just to back that up, this from Alabama News Station Local 15. The University of Mobile's cross-country coach, Ollie Stevenson, told them that he thought it was odd. There were bomb-sniffing dogs at the start and finish lines of the Boston Marathon. He said they kept making announcements to the participants saying, "Do not worry, it's just a training exercise." Stevenson said he saw law enforcement spotters on the roofs at the start of the race. He's been in plenty of marathons in Chicago, D.C., London, and major metropolitan areas, but he says he's never seen that level of security before. He said, "I don't believe they're just having a training exercise." He said, "I think they may have had some sort of threat or suspicion called in." And, in fact, a man was photographed on the roof. That was on Yahoo.com blogs. You can find that with a news search. So the idea that no one knew that this could have happened is obvious. It's just bogus on the face of it. And the question follows, if this is son of 9/11, where is the war that it is designed to promote? Afghanistan and Iraq were the targets after 9/11, so what's being contemplated now? And all we need is Colin Powell sitting for the UN and accusing Iraq, using incontrovertible evidence, of course, of having weapons of mass destruction. Except that Iraq has been thoroughly destroyed, and there were no weapons of mass destruction, unless you're a Fox News viewer, you know, news for the illiterate. But you know what? Colin Powell is here. And there's an article by Andrei Ostrouk on Wall Street Journal this morning on their online blogs. Let's see. No, I guess it's an article, not a blog. He writes, "The North Korean regime would be committing suicide if Pyongyang decides to use nuclear weapons. Former U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell said today." There's more to that, but I want to get to callers. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I'm curious as to what you think of the marathon bombings, and Elliot's on the air.
Yeah. I basically want to say that you're putting out a mixed message this morning. I mean, you know, you started out with a coherent point about the long-term consequences of unemployment. The classic social science study of the Great Depression was by a man named Glenn Elder, who showed that graduating college or high school into the Great Depression, you know, damaged people's lives for decades to come. But then you shift and talk about the Boston bombing. Now, I just happened, it's just accidentally true, like you were a student in Texas, I was in graduate school in Boston, and, you know, this is the first time that I ever remember any kind of violence at the Boston Marathon. There are real human American people, as well as some foreign visitor people, who have had their lives now ruined. They're either dead or many more have had amputations that will change their entire lives.
And there are three times as many who have died on the roads.
Evidence that it's a false flag operation, why would you jump to any conclusions? It could be a crazy right-wing domestic terrorist like Oklahoma City.
Well, if I can just
someone from overseas who's like getting back for Bin Laden or whatever.
Well, that's entirely out of
these people's legs
your
are not going to be sewn back on.
What I'm saying is that's entirely out of your mouth. You said false flag. I haven't said the words false flag until now. You said that I'm laying blame. I'm not.
Well, you're complaining about Boston as if, you know, the U.S. government, deserves special blame. I happen to this day, carry a day pack which happens to have the name of my university in Boston. Lots of people go to places like the Boston Marathon with day packs for their a bottle of water or their lunch or whatever. Now, they should have had tighter security.
Well, I don't know. What I'm saying is that the security is very tight. And what I've also been saying is that I'm criticizing the press for using this, saying that this is, you know, similar to, and implying strongly this is similar to 9/11. And I think it is, but not in the way that they're saying.
Well, the number of fatalities is smaller, but the severity of those severe injuries and deaths is similar in, on a spectrum.
Well, I think it's important to bring that up. I think that's a good point.
Be happy with what you're saying.
Well, good. I want to stir up some trouble here because let's take the 9/11 incidents, for example, which I would consider a false flag attack. And I think this may very well be a false flag attack. I don't know. That should not be obscured by the fact that people suffered and died. There are less than 3,000 people who died altogether in those incidents and 9/11. And as you'll recall, that was used for wars, which killed many, many times that many people. So it was used for hysteria, whether you agree that it was a false flag attack or not. And my point is that this event is being used similarly and may well bring us to war with Iran.
It could be an Oklahoma City right-wing nut.
That's just the point. It's like we don't know who it is, but it's being used for warmongering.
Unless it's an Oklahoma City right-wing nut.
It doesn't matter. Well, it could be used against right-wingers in that case. But
the guy who bombed the Olympics was a right-wing anti-abortion nut.
Yes, it was.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think we agree more than disagree on that. I was talking about Colin Powell suddenly popping up and talking about North Korea. He said, if we think those weapons, and that would be weapons of mass destruction, are about to be used, the North Koreans would be held to account, and we have capacity to destroy the regime, Colin Powell told reporters on the sidelines of an economic conference in Moscow. However, one shouldn't get hysterical about such possibilities, said Mr. Powell. And departing from that text, of course, one could accuse Mr. Powell of getting rather hysterical about the imaginary weapons of mass destruction. Or then on the other hand, when it was not appropriate for him to be hysterical, he reported the My Lai massacre in terms that gave the American public the idea that nothing big had happened there and looked the other way. So very interesting that Colin Powell should pop up. And I believe we have another caller. Francesca is on the line. Hello.
Hi, great show. To quote Jim Hightower, you know what really makes me sick about this whole thing is that why is it when like that a bomb is considered an act of terror and a high-capacity machine gun that guns down those 26 people in Newtown is not. Isn't that interesting?
Funny that.
Or frustrating. It's just, you know, and given the fact that they didn't pass one damn thing in the Congress about them.
Yeah, you can still get your 100 round magazines. Well, that's a good point. You know, gosh, we're almost out of time already. So
okay.
Thanks for your call.
Well,
I'll just go real quickly to tell you that the U.S. Peleliu Marine carrier has been spotted in Victoria Harbor in Hong Kong. This means that it's on the way to an entirely different destination. Officers aboard the USS Peleliu, an amphibious assault ship in port with landing vessels USS Rushmore and USS Green Bay, played down any connection between their Hong Kong stopover and North Korea's recent threats, but agreed the matter might be raised when they hosted members of the local Chinese Army garrison. That's from SCMP.com. That's the South China Morning Post. Interesting news source. And we're talking about the Peleliu Amphibious Assault Group, the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit. We're talking about 4,000 Marines and sailors at the minimum that are on the move and in Hong Kong. And that's the latest news you're not supposed to know. Stay tuned, because Parafoggering is coming up on KBOO Portland.
Sponsor Palestine, Imperialism, and the New Middle East, the Arab Spring 2 years on, a two-day conference at Portland State organized by Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights, held on April 27th and 28th. Speakers include Nadia Elia, professor of gender and global studies at Antioch University, Ahmed Maher, co-founder of Egypt's revolutionary April 6th youth movement, Remy Kanazi, Palestinian-American poet and activist, Cindy Corey, parent of ISM activist Rachel Corey, and Aaron Dixon, founder of Seattle's chapter of the Black Panther Party. The conference is located at Smith Memorial Student Union, and registration begins at 9 a.m. each day. Child care and food provided. More information can be found on Facebook at Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights. Click on Events.
My guest today is David Stockman. He is a former congressman and former budget director in the Reagan administration, and a Wall Street investor, and the author of several books. The most recent book, which has caused a huge stir, is called The Great Deformation, The Corruption of Capitalism in America. So, David Stockman, welcome to KBOO.
I'm very happy to be with you.
Well, I mean, I've been reading a lot about your book. It's got a big stir. People are writing about it. How do you feel?
Well, I was trying to stir the pot. I will say that. I think we've been drifting for many decades now, living in a kind of dream world with a lot of financial bubbles, a massive buildup of debt, a Federal Reserve that's running the printing presses over time and flooding Wall Street with cheap money, but not doing much for the real economy of Main Street in America. So there are big issues to discuss and debate. My book was aimed at doing that, and at least in that respect, I think it succeeded.
Well, and it's a big book, over 700 pages, and there are more dodgy bailouts than I thought existed.
Okay.
Well, if that's what you want, you can find every one of them in there, I think. But you really focus on the 2008 bailout of AIG, and why is that?
Well, because that's what triggered the whole panic in the fall of 2008. I call it the BlackBerry panic after the Lehman event, or the failure of Lehman Brothers. It was argued at the time by Paulson, who was in the Treasury Department, and Bernanke at the Fed, that this was a once-in-500-year event that was so threatening and resulted from such unusual and mysterious sources or forces that we had to do anything and everything to stop it, including set aside all the normal rules of fiscal prudence and free market
operations. After all, the free market is about the freedom to fail as well as succeed. What I try to demonstrate in the book is that all of that was not true, that we were not heading towards a Great Depression 2.0, that AIG could have filed for bankruptcy. It wouldn't have undermined all the insurance companies that it owned, that the ATMs weren't going dark, that the banks in Main Street, unlike Wall Street, were in good shape, that this whole crisis, this so-called meltdown, was primarily in the canyons of Wall Street and was designed to bail out Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs. And that is very different from the received wisdom from what they told you at the time, but I think I document it pretty well in the chapters that cover that in my book.
Well, I guess sort of like a precursor of many bailouts that came after that. But one thing you talk about, let's start with basics. What exactly is sound money?
Well, sound money is basically a notion that the central bank's job is simply to be a standby source of liquidity for the banking system based on good collateral presented when banks need cash in order to fund deposit outflows. And that is a very different notion than what the Fed is doing today. The Fed is basically the monetary central planner of the United States. It is attempting to control everything: GDP, employment, housing, retail sales, the stock market, the price of bonds, the price of money, the yield curve on the Treasury debt. And that is leading to a broken financial system and huge windfalls for traders who can take advantage of the free money that the Fed is passing out. So the Fed's activist, interventionist, massive bond buying campaign is 180 degrees opposite of what the founders intended in 1914 when the Fed